The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things. Hello. Welcome to Exposing the Masters Within, the one and only hour on radio or the internet dedicated solely to helping you expose yourself. My name is John Schulte. I'm here to serve you, to help you to know more of the truth about you. It's often said, looks can be deceiving. And we all know that the surface of things is, by definition, shallow. So thanks for joining me today as we journey through the looking glass to explore what's on the other side, to explore what's beneath the surface. We're here together to discover, uncover, and recover our masters within. You knew your mastery much more fully when you signed up for your on-earth sojourn. But you mostly forgot it soon after leaving the cozy confines of your mother's womb. You've rediscovered some inkling of it, or you wouldn't be listening to me now. So, it's time to remember the masters we are. It's time to reclaim the power we have. It's time for Exposing the Masters Within. Let's get started.
Today is Sunday, September 9th, 2009. Where'd that come from? 4th, 2011. For those listening live, and it is not if you're listening to the recording. So welcome aboard. And today we are going to be dealing with addiction, talking about it, exploring what it is, how it works, how to deal with it, at least from my point of view. And before we step to that, let's connect. And as we shifted the connection process last week, I'll do it again that way this week. So the first thing I would ask each of you to do is to open up to your own divinity, to your own mastery, to your own higher self or soul, or pick your terminology, but breathe in your own power and breathe into your own power. Wonderful. And let's go to that primary source of support from the moment that we show up here in a physical body. Mother Earth is always here with us, always there beneath us, holding us up, lifting us up even. And so allow yourself now to breathe into your connection with our Mother Earth. Allow yourself to breathe in and feel the energy of her support, the energy of her love, and just open up to receive that as much as you are able. And continuing on the support pathway, choose now, to the degree you're willing, to open to the connection with all of those beings, the ascended masters, the angels, the spirit guides, all the beings of light who are here to serve you, who are here to serve us, who are here to serve humanity. And allow yourself to feel their presence in your life. It's always there. It's about opening up to receive it, opening up to connect with it, opening up to feel that support. So breathe into that support. And let its presence expand through you, through your life, through your energy, through your relationships. All right. And the next step out of connection, the next step into connection, is to step to connect with all those who are co-creating this show with us today, all those listening live, all those listening through the recording. Everyone listening is listening now. And so in this now, to connect with that community, the community who are co-creating this with me and with us today, and in every now moment that it's listened to again. And feel the strength in that group, the power to create together, to move forward together. And one more expansion out to open into the connection with all the light workers on the planet, all those who are consciously seeking divine connection, consciously seeking divine connection and empowerment within themselves and with the rest of us. And knowing that strength and the movement and the momentum of that energy, of that intention to come into our power, to discover our mastery and expose it to the world, to share ourselves, to share our light. It is a powerful momentum, and we can connect with that and ride that momentum, use that momentum to aid ourselves in our own awakening. Wonderful. Thank you for joining me in that. Always the way I would choose to start the show. Now, to addiction. And as I get into this topic, which was brought to me by one of you, actually more than one of you mentioned this as something to talk about on the show, I need to say a few words about my own history as a healer. I don't have a history with the, I guess, stereotypical addictions of alcohol or drugs. By some psychological definitions, psychiatric definitions, true addiction is with a substance that can cross the blood-brain barrier and affect change within the brain chemistry. And so I don't have personal history with that. I do not have much in the way of personal history with working with that kind of client. What I have mostly, in terms of direct interaction, which is, I guess, secondary interaction, is dealing with clients, students who are dealing with someone in their life who has that kind of addiction. And, of course, except for right at the very beginning when my primary focus was massage therapy before the hands-on energy work, but even then, everything, my basic focus has always been to come from the spiritual dimension. So that's how I'm going to be tackling this today, even though that first most restrictive definition of addiction is very physically oriented. It's a physically oriented definition. Now, a lot of people, including a lot of psychological professionals, counselors, etc., have greatly expanded the definition of addiction. And primarily defining it or looking at it in terms of how a person's interaction, and it doesn't have to be with a physical substance, but how a person's interaction with something in their lives affects their lives negatively. In other words, when does a habit or a behavior reach the level that it might get labeled as an addiction? Well, it's a rather nebulous definition, but essentially, when it is creating negative effects in their lives. Now, how negative makes it an addictive circumstance? Hard to define. And most people, I think, have their own definition of what it looks like. Perhaps it's kind of like, well, one of the things that people are supposedly addicted to these days is pornography, and a lot of that out there with the internet now. But it's kind of like what the Supreme Court said about pornography. I think people in some ways look at addiction and they know it when they see it. That's how the Supreme Court defined pornography. essentially, is it something that you know when you see? So how destructive does something have to be before it would get labeled officially as addiction? Hard to say. Hard to say. I'm certainly no expert in this topic. And for that reason, because I'm not an expert in this, and yet I got the guidance really strongly last week to say this week that's what we'd be talking about, addiction. So I spent a lot of time this week really sitting with it and exploring with my guides what it meant, what it meant and what could be offered out here. What made something addictive? What are the boundaries of it? And I got to say, as I was sitting with this, and especially the last couple of days, the boundary just kept expanding. And hopefully what I offer will make sense to a few of you, because it certainly was an eye-opener to me. And I will preface this, as if that's not what I'm already doing. I'll preface this by bringing up something that may seem rather strange in this connection. Certainly not a first logical step to take. To another psychological condition that actually the psychiatric community argues about. And that is, the most common term for it that most people out there would know would be multiple personality disorder. Now, its more typical terminology is something of associative disorder or condition, and there may be more words to that, and it may be more official than that. But I think that that is an important piece. That idea of disassociation is a hugely important piece when it comes to what I'd like to share today about addiction and the energy of addiction. Because I personally believe, having sat with this and having dealt with it again with or through a number of clients in their dealings with those who were physically addicted or, again, other types of addiction that are less physically based, that at its root, addiction comes from an extreme need to disassociate, to disconnect from something, experience, etc. in our lives. Now, that would make sense to a lot of people, I think. But it's not a place that we would go. And I want to talk about it because I believe that we all have a large degree of this disassociative condition. Now, not to the extent that we literally have different personalities that express through us as if they were different individuals. But I want to just make some analogies here. And one of the first ones is, in looking at this, and you say, well, I don't have split personality. Well, are there differences in how you express yourself and in how you interact with the various people in your life? Now, for me personally, I know that that's absolutely true. There are certain things that I won't share with certain people. And we can call those boundaries. We can call those fears. I don't want to share this part of myself with that person because I believe that person is going to judge it. Or because I'm in judgment of it, which ultimately is where the fear would come from. I don't want to deal with the response to it, etc. And I'm certainly not speaking about huge negative pathologies. There are simply things that I believe that I would not choose to share with other people who I don't think would find them acceptable. And yet, let's go and look at how this kind of distinction, how we express ourselves with our friends, is different than perhaps how we express ourselves in the workplace, or how we express ourselves with family, or how we express ourselves with those who we might perceive as our teachers or mentors, or those who we might perceive as our students. And again, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with this. I'm simply saying that we each have the aspects of ourselves that we're going to share with certain people and not with others. There are a number of people I know on the spiritual path who still have a deep connection with certain things that a lot of people on the spiritual path would not necessarily understand. And the example that comes to mind first is of a few people who are extremely dedicated to certain sports teams, and yet also extremely dedicated to awakening up into their own divine awareness within themselves. And a lot of people on the spiritual path, and I don't know that it would be actually judgment in many cases, in some it might be, but a lot of people on the spiritual path would look at that and go, what's wrong with that person? Why would this matter to them? And so the point is, these people who are the dedicated fans are not going to share that aspect of themselves within the community of spiritual seekers. And that's just one example. I know lots of people who are very different when they walk into a spiritual circle than they are when they're dealing with those people in their lives who don't have that, who aren't looking to be on the path, who aren't looking to find divinity. There, in many cases, is a greater degree of openness, a greater degree of willingness to be honest with themselves and with the other people they're interacting with when they're in that spiritual community, as the group that are gathered here to co-create this show today. It feels safer, and so we allow ourselves to share more of ourselves. And yet, in some ways, that is, it's a selection process. It's a process of discerning in the moment what it is safe for us to do, what it is safe for us to not do, or safer for us to not do. Now, let's see if we can pull this back more specifically, more consciously, to the topic of addiction. When we first step into body, it's my personal belief, and since I don't remember it consciously in this lifetime, I can't be certain of this, but I certainly believe it very strongly, and it has been reinforced in multiple ways. But I believe that as we come in, when that first breath is taken outside of the womb, I believe that we are pretty darn conscious of our divinity. That has not gone away yet. And then we start experiencing the physical reality. And we start experiencing the emotional body. And we start experiencing lots of things that, if we were fully capable of expressing our divine power, would be no problem. Poof, I'm hungry. Poof, I'm cold. Poof, I need a hug. These things would just happen automatically, and then they don't. And so begins the process of forgetting, and I think it happens fairly quickly for most of us, of forgetting that connection with our divinity. And I'm going to make this step and this leap and this jump from what I was just talking about to what I'm talking about now, and then into or toward the direction of addiction, which is this, that forgetting is actually a process of disassociation. In other words, that is a response to these circumstances that we find ourselves in as the infant, and our powers to instantly manifest, to affect the reality around us, are suddenly not working. Well, it's enough to have to deal with these circumstances, all these other people and the bright lights and the smells and all the things that are around us as we come in, all the things that are new to us as we come into a body. That is a shock to our system. And I think that's a shock no matter how much the birth may have taken place in a home birth setting or something that is much more consciously attempting to nurture than a hospital setting with the traditional Western view of birthing and all of that. But I think that shock is still there, because one minute we're divinity and we can manifest instantaneously and we can create what we're desiring like that, snap your finger, and there it is. And the next moment we're in a body and it's like a prison. And, well, think of the thing that might disturb you the most, whether it's loud noises or flashing lights or whatever, a big Hollywood song and dance number, something that would just overwhelm the senses. That's what happens immediately as we come into the body. And that's difficult enough to deal with without the additional level of pain of remembering that just a moment before, or just a day before, or just a week before, we could do anything. And so I believe that as soon as we come in, we step into this pattern of disassociation, of cutting things off that are simply too painful. And the irony is that that very thing that we cut off is our own awareness of our divinity. And that creates every problem after that. Because we don't know our worth, we go into the world seeking our value, and we only get a sense of our value to the degree that we get it reflected back to us. And so we start learning, what are the acceptable behaviors? What are the acceptable patterns of behavior that will get us the most amount of approval or the most amount of attention? Approval is better, but even negative attention is better than no attention at all, because it's energy. Whatever we focus attention on, whether it's good attention and we're happy about it, whether it's bad attention and we're mad about it or afraid of it, etc., we're sending energy to it. We're feeding it. And so we start stepping out into these patterns. And again, at the beginning, I certainly believe there's a tremendous amount of awareness, but there's not, I don't believe, a lot of what we would think of as thought. I don't think in the infant there's a whole lot of logical processing going on. There's simply the overwhelming surprise of each now moment and needing to deal with that. And so as we set up a lot of these initial patterns, they're not by choice. They're out of, okay, we need to respond to the patterns energetically that are around us, our parents, the doctor, the nurse, the caregivers, etc., whoever else might be involved in our initial early care, and we're seeking to learn those patterns as quickly as we can so that we can get our needs met to the best degree that we can get them met. And that includes all the physical needs, but that also includes all those needs for approval, all those needs for self-discovery. All right, so again, let's carry this further forward and head toward a more direct connection with addiction. As we move through life, ideally, as we get older, we step into greater and greater conscious choice in our lives. But quite frankly, most people spend most of the time living their habits. Now,
What is a habit? It's a pattern of behavior that we are used to, that we are comfortable in. Now, it's said, and I've never really researched this fully, it's said that it takes 21 days to create a new habit by repetition. As we do something over and over again, it's like we're building a highway in our brain. Neural pathways are created. When we do something for the first time, connections are made in our brain that are the pathways through which we do that thing. And the more we do it, the stronger that pathway becomes. Now again, I don't know the original research on this, but that's part of why it becomes so hard to break a habit, any kind of habit, because it becomes the default. It's an automatic response almost. Well, in many cases, it is an automatic response. There's no almost about it. And to overcome it, to create a new habit, and that actually, I believe, is one of the reasons why many people have difficulty creating new habits or breaking old habits, is because they're simply trying to break the old habit without programming a new habit in its place. So if you have a habit that you do every time something happens in your life, you go have a cigarette. Or every time something happens in your life, you go watch TV so you don't have to think about it. Or every time something happens in your life, you eat something when you get emotionally upset to try and stop feeling that upset. Those become programs. They become automatic. You don't think about them. It just happens. Or again, get upset, go shopping. Or watch porn. Or blah, blah, blah. These things become the basis on which the level of addiction gets built. And again, for me, it becomes an addiction when it is having, I guess by the person's own definition, a profound negative effect in their life. Now, the extremes of this, I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about hitting rock bottom. And I like that idea because I see that so frequently in people stepping up to do healing, to discover or search for a spiritual connection, to really seek to change their lives. They have to hit a wall where things become so bad that to maintain the same habits, to maintain the same patterns, is more painful than the process of seeking to change those or create new habits or patterns. And so for me, this is part of where I think a lot of people have a problem in trying to deal with addiction. Because whether it's at the extreme level and it's alcohol, it's drugs, or even cigarettes, where it's something where, yes, there is a direct chemical interaction in the brain where it even strengthens those neural pathways or makes them even harder to break than with something that is simply a behavioral pattern or habit. But they're all patterns in the brain. And in many ways, to me, whether someone is going to take it to that level where it is destroying their life, where it is overwhelming, where the negative is far outweighing the good in their life, to me is a degree related to what they're seeking to disassociate from. In other words, if you have what you experience as a large pain, and that is irregardless of what anyone else might think, whether you should feel that way or not, if there is a large enough pain that you don't know how to deal with, you don't know how to change, you don't know how to heal or move or get out of your system, then you need a large enough behavioral pattern of suppression. And so I truly think that people escalate their suppression. Perhaps
perhaps. Some people talk about television. It used to be called, when I was little, the boob tube, because you would sit in front of it and be a drooling idiot. You know, perhaps that's a gateway to drugs, because it's a way that we choose to use to suppress. And I'm not saying that watching television is bad, but in many cases, it is about turning off something that we don't want to deal with, as are the long list of things that people can be addicted to, from sex to computers to surfing the internet to shopping to alcohol and drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There seems to be no end anymore to those 12-step anonymous groups seeking to help people deal with what they are finding to be addictions with huge negative repercussions in their life. But in some ways, again, let's look at the core of what addiction is. It's a behavioral pattern that is engaged in repeatedly, that the person engaging in that pattern feels powerless to change. And that, to me, is the key to the whole thing. It's that they're experiencing it as negative. They might desire to change it, or they might not. But in either case, they feel unable to change it. In other words, one of the core pieces of what, and again, in traditional religious versions of why we're here and what we're doing, one of the greatest things that we have is this free will, the opportunity to choose. And yet, isn't it interesting that it's hardwired into us, literally, in the cells of brain chemistry and how the nervous system functions, that we have the capacity to shut our free will down to a tremendous degree in service to keeping us safe. Now, in this case, in the addictive case, I believe a lot of it is about emotional pain, because we are not taught how to deal with the emotional body, and we have a tremendous misunderstanding typically of what it even is. And we have these idealized visions of what it's supposed to be that really get in the way of dealing with our emotions effectively. And so the best we can do is try to suppress them, for the most part. Because I'm not aware of a culture on this planet, except for some Aboriginal ones, perhaps, that truly is across the board supportive of emotional experience and teaches its members how to deal with their emotions in a constructive, positive way. Even the so-called negative emotions. I don't think it exists out there. And that, to me, is the root of what this is about. Now, yes, there are addictions that come on through physical issues. Someone has a tremendous amount of pain, they're put on morphine or one of the other drugs, and then they become addicted to it because their physical pain was so tremendous that to try and numb it, which is what those drugs are about, they're trying to anesthetize the person so they don't feel the pain, those drugs become addictive. And they need that. They need that just to get through the day, even when the physical pain is no longer there. But to me, that is actually the path of all addictions. It is that pathway of needing to suppress what we are not ready or willing to handle. And specifically, in this case, at the emotional level. And yes, I believe there are those physical addictions, but I believe even they come from a core of seeking to suppress the emotional body because we don't know what to do with it. So I want to go back to that infant again and talk for a moment about what the emotional body is for And if you've worked with me for a while, you've probably heard some of this, if not all of it. But our emotional body is largely a feedback mechanism. It is to give us a positive or negative response to what we are going through in that moment, to what we're experiencing, to what we are choosing in that moment, so that we know whether to continue choosing it, which is if it's a positive emotion, or whether to choose something else, which is if it's a negative emotion. All right, so let's go back to that infant. That infant has no power to choose. And again, came from complete choice and complete ability, complete capacity to simply think something, and there it is. Into a circumstance where basic needs can't be met. Can't be fed. Can't get these people out of my face. Can't get a hug when I need it. I can't just think things into reality, etc. And the emotions that come up with that, the upset of being hungry, of feeling hungry, what must that feel like? To feel hungry for the first time. How horribly upsetting. So you got this physical hunger, and then you've got the distress that you simply can't get rid of it. Oh, dear Lord. It's no wonder they wail. And then you get it satiated, you get fed, and it comes back again. This is what life is going to be? What did I sign up for? But again, that's the physical level. At the emotional level, that distress, that, oh, I can't do anything about this. I can't make a choice. So all the emotions that come through, again, I don't know the details, but kids can't really do much of anything except look for quite a while. Look at the world. Try to figure out how to move arms and legs so they'll do what you want them to do. That's the basic experience at the beginning. Try to get these people to fix when I feel wrong. Is it any wonder that we do such a good job learning to suppress what we're feeling? If the feeling, and again, purpose of the emotional body, to give us feedback about choices to make. But as an infant, you can't make any choices. The adults around you, the caretakers, have all the power. They have the responsibility to take care of you, but they have all the power. Until you learn to crawl, you can't even change position much. You don't like where you're at. It's too hot. It's too cold. I've got pee on me. Nothing you can do about it until someone else comes to intervene. That right there is why addictions flourish. Because we get so good at suppressing. And then we grow up, and again, there are tons of reasons. Very individual, completely individual. Even things that we can put in the same category. Oh, abuse of this kind. Oh, well, everyone's abuse is different. Everyone's neglect is different. Everyone's pain is different. It's unique. And so we create unique pathways, and they overlap. Lots of people are addicted to drugs or alcohol. Lots of people are addicted to one of these other things, whether it's shopping, to pornography, to surfing the internet, to watching TV, to eating, or one of the myriad of other things that we can get obsessively focused on to try to suppress our pain. Wow. Well, that was rather depressing. And yet, it leads me to the way out. What was the way in? Largely, as far as I'm concerned, suppressing the emotional body. and we've got all this backlog of old emotion built up in us that we're seeking to hold in because it's unacceptable to let it out. And we need stronger and stronger tools to hold it in as we move along on the path of life and have more and more negative things that we are incapable or unwilling to deal with. And so that leads us to the pathway out, which is to go deal with the emotional body. Take a breath. That's the first step back. That's the first step in. Whatever you're seeking to release, whatever habit, even if it's not to the level that you would define it as addiction, whatever level you are seeking to change from, the first start is being as present as possible with where you are right now. And the way to do that is to start with the breath. And as you open the breath, you open up to feeling more. Now, one of the things that I was never warned about when I ended up walking this path, and I don't think it would have hugely made a difference, because I needed to walk a healing path and I needed to find a spiritual connection. But I wasn't told that it's not all roses and light. It's not all happy. And all the people walking the spiritual path aren't all happy. And they're not all nice. They still have their issues. And so you're going to walk forward on this path and find things that you don't want to find, because they're reflections of what's inside of you that you are still suppressing. That we are still suppressing. But it starts with the choice, and I would say the commitment, to go within, to connect within, to explore within, to choose to express what's within. Now, this is not about dumping your emotions on someone else, although it can help to have a witness. It can help to have someone else there who is willing to simply say to you, okay, keep breathing. It's going to be okay. And let yourself intend that you're feeling this to get rid of it, which is an important piece of the process. If you don't have that intention that you're bringing up this emotion in order to clear it, then in many cases it's just being recycled and amplified. That's when we bring things up and we stew. We get in this space where we just stew. Oh, how could he do that? How could she say that? How could this happen? Blah, 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 blah. And we sit in blame and we sit in resentment and we sit in anger or whatever emotion is up, and we just go around and around with it, and we're not moving it anywhere. We're just turning the volume up until eventually we get tired of it, or we get distracted by something else, or we go to choose to do one of those behaviors that we consciously use to suppress. But if you're going to do this, you need to breathe and you need to have this intention that when something comes up emotionally, you're seeking to clear it. Because from a physiological, from a physical level, or physical perspective, the whole process of an emotion, something happens to you and you get angry. The physical process of anger takes far less than a minute, far less, for something to happen and then anger to come up. The reason it sticks around is not because of what had just happened in that moment. It's because of all the backlog of anger that is still stored down inside and tries to hitch a ride on the anger train out the door. Oh, good, he's letting anger come up. Let's get out of here. But if there's that resistance to letting anger be okay
if there's that resistance to letting, again, anger is just an example here. It could be any emotion. To letting that particular emotion be okay, then what's going to happen is it's just going to get suppressed. The clamps are going to get put down that much tighter, and there's going to be that much more pressure that has to build up before it can seek a way out again, find a pathway out again. And I think that's what most of us do. And it is that need to build a better cage for our old emotions, a stronger one to keep it in more, that leads into even those physical addictions to drugs or alcohol, etc. Because we need something that has more power to it. No, not power in the true sense of power, but has more ability to suppress, has more energetic force to aid our suppression. And so, although this is not an exhaustive exploration, I really believe that this is the core of where addiction comes from and the core of how to start dealing with it. Now, I would say one other thing. Often, especially when the addiction is drugs or alcohol, but not just then, often it is the people around the addict who are the first ones to have issue with the addictive behavior. The addict is just trying to suppress. They're not worried about the repercussions in the lives around them. It's the family, it's the friends who are going, "What are you doing? Why are you doing that?" Well, and the addict can't say. They just can't stop. And when it comes to the family members or the friends who are dealing with the addicts, one of the first things to come to, and this is not easy, one of the first things to come to is boundary setting. Is saying, this behavior that you are doing, I may not be able to stop you from drinking or taking drugs, but I can't say you're not welcome in my house when you're this way. I can say that you can't verbally abuse me, and if you do, you're going to leave. I can say that I'm not going to keep giving you money that you're going to throw down this endless pit, etc. That's huge. And if, as a family member, a friend, a caregiver, a loved one, of someone who has one of those extreme addictions, if you're not willing and able to set boundaries with this person, and sometimes it's not even physically safe to do so, you need to go to the level that you need to go to. If that means calling the police to get your relative who is threatening you out of your house, then you need to do that. And some would call it tough love, whatever. But if you cannot or will not set boundaries with the person who is addicted at that level in your life, you can't help them. Because the very thing that they cannot do is set boundaries for themselves. They cannot make a different choice. Now, if you are around them and you are choosing to set boundaries, what are you doing? You are giving them a reflection back that it is possible to set boundaries, that it is possible to request different behaviors in life, in circumstances, in whatever's going on. And they need that. They need that. So before doing an intervention, set some boundaries. Before calling the police, see if you can set some boundaries. Before throwing them out, see if you can set boundaries at a level that is about individual behaviors that they engage in. And then you set progressively tougher boundaries as you need to, if you need to. But one thing to always remember in all of this, even when it is your own addictions, or wherever they exist on that level of habit to obsession to addiction, because I believe that's a continuum. It's a continuum, and where we fall on it within our various behaviors could change, and it tends to change toward the more extreme, but we have the power to change it in the other direction. But whether it's your addictions or habits that you're seeking to change, or whether you're seeking to help another. The one thing, again, to bring into this, again, I've said it in other circumstances, but not here today. The one thing to bring into this that is so vitally important is this. If it's you, it's remembering and reclaiming, I am a divine light. I am a divine being. I am a divine soul. And I choose to call on that energy, that aspect of myself, to seek to make the changes, to set the intention, to release it, to remind myself to breathe, etc. Because ultimately the way to unlock, unwind, release, whether it's addiction, obsession, or simply habit, is to go back to where it started and reclaim our divinity. That's where our power is waiting for us. That's where the power resides. And if it's someone else who has that addictive behavior that you want to help them with, it is so important to remind yourself of that. This is a divine being having soul experiences through this personality, through this physical body, through this life, through these troubles, through these traumas, through these difficulties. There's a soul in there making these choices. And at the soul level, there's nothing wrong. Because here's the other thing. If you, as that observer of someone else, is looking at this person as being completely disempowered, you can't help them. Because that is the reflection of what they see. That's the reflection of what they're experiencing, that they can't do anything to change it, that they're helpless to their addiction, that it's a hopeless situation. And so that stepping up into the vision, that no matter how bad it seems, no matter how horrible it is, whatever they're experiencing is, that's still a divine soul in there with the power to change anything and everything. And when you can breathe into that, you start on the pathway of stepping out of seeing this person as a victim of their addiction. And then, again, you're giving them a different reflection back rather than the one of, you know what, you're right, your life does suck and you can't do anything to change it. You're saying to them energetically, ah, it may suck, but you're a divine being and you can change anything. And if you breathe into those two ideas, those two energies, they feel very, very different. So, thank you to all of you out there who brought this topic up to me. Obviously, there was a lot there to say. It may not be the end of it, especially depending upon what feedback I might get from you guys. Remember, I'm always looking for your feedback, and I'm so grateful for it, even if I can't or don't get around to responding directly to it. I do read it all, and everything that you bring me in the way of questions and topics, etc., does go into that list, into that pile. That will be dealt with in the right timing as the group of us co-created together. So thank you for all that. And as I say, depending upon what feedback I get from you guys, what further thoughts or questions might come out of this, there may well be another show on this topic, or at least partially on this topic, and especially perhaps that last piece about how to deal with those others who are in these kinds of patterns. And there is something, I don't know what, that they'll bring in. We've just got a few minutes here for the channeling, so there is something there. So I will go into that. Allow yourself to breathe deeply while I do the toning, and we'll bring in whoever's going to come speak with us here today. Hmm. Hello, dear ones. This is the Divine Mother come to be with you today. We will just go on a short journey, very short, but allow yourself to make your preparations. Take a deep breath. Put down whatever else you might be doing or thinking about. And close your eyes if they are open and allow yourself to go into your heart center. Focus within your heart center. And we are going to join modern technology for a moment. And your heart center is actually, interestingly enough, it is a train station today. And so you're walking through your heart to get to your train. And it is just about ready to leave. So you just have time to get on it, and you get on it, and you realize it is one of those bullet trains. So it travels very, very quickly. And the train is off. And just as quickly it has arrived, and you're at the new station. And you get off the train, and out of the mist around you, a scene unfolds. And it is a scene of a birth taking place. And it is almost completed. And you get closer and closer and closer. And as you get right there, the baby comes out. The infant comes out. And you reach forward as you realize that this infant is you, being born in this lifetime. And you reach forward in love to take yourself in your own arms at that instant of the first breath that you took. You wrap yourself in loving arms and you give yourself unconditional love. You give yourself gratitude for your courage, for your bravery, for your willingness to come into this body, because no matter what else you have gone through, you have had some amazing, powerful experiences. And you will have even more to come. And you whisper this in your ear, even though the words do not have the meaning, but the energy does. And you, as the infant, receive this energy, this gratitude, this love, this unconditionality. And if you will, make a choice now to whisper as well, to intend as well, that you are choosing to step into your power, that you are choosing to work with yourself as the inner child to move yourself forward into your power and your love and your light, to bring yourself forward in that way to where you are now in your lifetime, in your life stream, in the passage of days of linear time. You make that promise to go back, to unfold, to uncover, to release, to clear what needs to be released and cleared, so that that power that was there before that first breath, that divine power, that mastery that you are, will be uncovered, will be exposed, will be expressed. And give the love that you have to yourself, to yourself. And know that this connection is now open. You can get on this train at any time and go back there and give more love. But it is now time for you to get back on the train and return to now in linear time. And it is time for you, as the infant, to continue with that progress. But now you have a different anchoring, for you know that you are out there waiting. And you are choosing to undo what was buried, to unbury it, to bring it forth, to bring your light into the light of day. And so you come back, and you breathe into that and feel the expansion, the openness that is there now because of what you did then. And give yourself love and appreciation and gratitude in this moment, even as you receive our love and gratitude, and as we take our leave from this form, but not from our presence with you always. Namaste, dear ones. All right. Well, thank you again. Doug, go ahead and start those chimes. I cannot create this show without you guys, so thank you once more for joining me. I will be back next week, same time, same place, maybe same topic, who knows. I certainly don't. I hope you'll join me again out there in the truth within. Remember, you never know where this show will go. Even when I do have a topic, I never know where it's going. And I wish you all the highest in this week and in your life. Namaste, my friends.